Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dead at Midnight by M. L. Bullock, narrated by Suzanne Elise Freeman. 1. Chloe.
There are major flaws in your plan, Lynn, not just one or two. Have you actually thought this idea through? I mean, Joey? He's gay. I think I told you that. Walking down the stairs with my best friend, I shook my head, scarcely able to believe what I was hearing. I tossed her overnight bag up on my shoulder, grateful to have rekindled my relationship with Lynn. I hoped she felt the same about me, but what she was proposing was absolutely ridiculous. Talk about living in a fantasy world. I don't think being dead should mean he can't ever have love, Chloe. That's very short-sighted of you. I snorted at her answer. No, you're the one being short-sighted. He doesn't want your kind of love, Lynn. I've read that the paranormal world doesn't work the same way this one does. There are no limits there. It's more like soul love, not about gender or age or any of those temporal measurements. I'm not saying we're going to fall in love or anything, but Joey was kind of beautiful, wasn't he? You just said those kinds of things don't matter. Which way are you going? She winked at me playfully. I'm exploring all the possibilities. Are you sure Joey hasn't said anything about me? Nothing at all? I think I would remember. No, he hasn't mentioned you in that way, Lynn. Sorry. Can we please change the subject? What happened to TJ? I thought you were crushing on him, girlfriend. Lynn's expression shifted to what I called stink face. She puckered her lips and flared her nose like she smelled something bad. Yuck. He's not my type. Besides, it's not like Joey and I can ever actually hook up. Unless... do ghosts? She glanced up at me as we cleared the stairs. I was glad she was going home. Where had she come up with this idea? Too many sappy Hallmark movies, I guessed. The sad thing was Lynn didn't realize Joey was walking behind us, sticking his finger down his throat to show me he was gagging over the idea. I ignored him and kept my eyes trained on Lynn. She only knew about Joey because he'd manifested himself at the Halloween party. After that, I felt pretty comfortable talking about him. Joey hadn't appeared to want to keep his existence a secret. I wondered if that had been a mistake. This is your fault, Joey Agnes.
Stop calling me that. Can I help it if I'm fabulous?
At first, I'd thought Lynn was joking about her infatuation with Joey, but from this conversation, I could see I was dead wrong. My best friend was crushing on Joey. Awkward. Okay, Lynn, I'm not short-sighted, nor am I the kind of person who looks down on anyone because of their differences. I think being dead is a major impediment for any relationship, but what I was referring to was Joey's sexuality. He's gay, Lynn. He was gay when he was alive, and he is still gay. Sweet and a pain in the ass at times, but completely and totally gay. I saw Lynn's eyes moisten and her bottom lip tremble. I could almost predict what she was going to say next. I didn't have to be psychic to hear her thoughts. I can change him. It'll be different. He will love me for me. Better stop this conversation now. Listen, girl, we stayed up pretty late last night, and you didn't get a lot of sleep. Neither did I. Please tell me, is the exhaustion talking? I know life's been hell at your house, but fantasizing about Joey is not the answer. You're talking crazy, Lynn. Keep it together. I'm going to talk to Aunt Tamara about you moving in, but you and Joey cannot happen. I need you to chill out.
Chill out about what?
Tamara walked into the foyer, her oversized glasses perched on her nose. She had her head buried in a stack of papers, no doubt the latest rendition of her book manuscript. Tamara was wrecking the ecosystem with her constant printer use. She'd been burning the midnight oil working on her new book, while Lynn and I cruised the internet looking at tattoos and watching Hallmark movies. I had worked with Lynn to improve her energy, too. The black aura, the one that emanated from her at the family home, was like sticky molasses. I could understand where it came from, her father, but it was affecting Lynn. It was an intensely negative aura, like a throbbing sickness. It would contaminate people who spent time near it if it was allowed to linger. The negativity had seeped into the walls and was now deeply embedded in her home, another reason to help her move out of that place. I was proud of Tamara, but I missed hanging out with her sometimes. Between her new romance with the cop, her ghost stories, and Joey's incessant neediness, I rarely saw her anymore. Before I could answer Tamara in any kind of reasonably dishonest way, Lynn offered up her lie.
Tattoos. We're thinking about tattoos. Or at least I am. Chloe thinks I should wait, but I really want one. Kind of like a sleeve. Maybe some sort of fingerless glove with thorns, or a sugar skull with flames behind it. I'm not sure.
Tamara removed her glasses and trained her pretty eyes on Lynn.
Tattoos are wonderful personal expressions, but here's a tip I wish someone would have shared with me. Get tattoos only when you're feeling good about life. Tattoos that memorialize painful memories aren't easily erased.
She smiled and slid her glasses back on her face. I snorted in surprise.
Don't tell us you have some guy's name tattooed on your behind.
She scowled at the suggestion.
Even I knew not to do that. I will say this, though. Avoid putting tattoos in any personal areas. Doing so can lead to some embarrassing conversations later. Just saying.
Tamara?
Lynn laughed at Tamara's confession, and I opened the front door.
Thanks for the tip. Later, y'all,
Lynn said. I handed Lynn her bag, and she hurried to get home before her dad returned from his latest road trip. Lynn had said things were not getting better there, but she was getting better at not being there. Between working at the ice cream shop with me and trying to finish school, she stayed pretty busy. At least on that front, things were better for her. I closed the door and breathed a sigh of relief, as did Joey, who was leaning against the door beside me. Tamara watched us curiously.
What's going on with you two? Did I miss something?
Joey peeked out the blinds to make sure Lynn's car was actually exiting the property.
You have no idea how exhausting she is, Chloe. Constantly trying to summon me. I mean, it doesn't even work like that. You need to vote her off the island, and don't even think about bringing her here permanently. She is a mixed bag of nuts, that one.
Tamara searched for answers as I began trying to explain the reason for Joey's histrionics without showing my hand. This wasn't how I wanted to have this conversation.
What do you mean, permanently? She's been summoning you?
Joey posed awkwardly and peeked through the blinds again.
Tried to catch up, Tamara. How could Lynn think I would be interested in her? I'm dead. Sorry, I don't mean to be ugly. I heard you try to lay the truth down, but Lynn's not processing any of it. I'd be more interested in the long guy than her. Let's just be honest. Roland is not my type. Ugh, I'm going to my room. Handle it, Chloe. I don't want her mooning over me all the time.
Joey began walking or trying to walk up the stairs. Once again, from the knees down, he was pretty transparent. When he got to the top landing, he looked over his shoulder and said,
"Told you I was a heartbreaker. Later."
A few seconds later, we heard his bedroom door slam. It was an entirely ridiculous situation, but what could we do but laugh? He was right, of course. Lynn was misdirecting her emotions, but according to the marathon of Hallmark movies we'd watched, she wouldn't be the first girl to fall for a ghost. Joey's hasty departure left me trying to explain to Tamara what was up with Lynn. She agreed with me. Lynn's crushing on Joey was merely an expression of her desire to escape her current situation. As I walked with Tamara to her office, I considered talking to her about inviting Lynn to stay. Lynn had asked if she could move in, but honestly, I wasn't sure how I felt about that. I liked Lynn a lot and enjoyed her company, but only in small doses. If Lynn was going to engage in this kind of craziness with Joey, I wasn't sure this was the place for her. The family home, commonly referred to as the Dead House, had more than its share of spiritual activity. We didn't need anyone here summoning the dead. Even I had no idea she was trying to do that. Lately, we had been in something of a spiritual lull, but it wouldn't stay that way. As sure as my name was Chloe Carroll, I knew that for a fact. Small things still happened from time to time, like my change purse or hairbrush would disappear. I would find them in weird places, too. Once, I found the word cursed written all over my notebook cover in red ink. At least, I think it was ink. I couldn't be sure.
What's on your mind? Did you girls stay up too late last night?
I pretended Tamara wasn't treating me like a kid. She did that sometimes. However, I knew she was doing the best she could, and so far, she'd managed to keep us all safe. And most of us were alive.
You look like you have something on your mind, Chloe. You may as well tell me what it is.
The house popped around us. The Riddott plantation was so old, it made noises whenever the weather threatened to change. Let the temperatures drop or have a storm roll through, and the place sounded like someone was stomping around on packing peanuts. The Dead House was like a paranormal thermometer. Today, every plank and every piece of trim creaked. Did Tamara notice? Our home felt very unsettled. Not just because of Lynn's weirdness or Tamara's hyper-focus on her paranormal work, or even the fact that Joey roamed the halls without legs. It was the curse springing to life. I'm cursed. Isn't that nice? Not just me, but all the women in our family. It all began with Lavinia Loper. A sudden chill made the hair on my arms rise dramatically. I didn't want to talk out loud about the curse in the house. This place had eyes and ears. Maybe later, if we went into town to grab some pizza, as was our usual weekend custom, I'd open this line of conversation. Last I heard, the curse breaker, a woman named Angela Webster, was driving over from Mobile, but there was some sort of delay in her schedule. The sooner, the better. When I'd done some preliminary study of my immediate family tree, I was shocked. I discovered most of the women in my mother's family line died at a young age. Rarely did they live past 40, with the exception of my grandmother Louise. How she ever accomplished that, I had no idea. She was dead, so I couldn't pick her brain, and she wasn't the kind of woman who would appreciate being contacted after death. She had never been a friendly woman, but she did provide me with a home when my mother had gone on her tours, which had been quite often. Louise was not the loving, grandmotherly sort of woman you hoped to have as a grandparent. As if Tamara read my mind, she said, "Let's head to town and grab some pizza if you're in the mood." That was our code phrase for, "Hey, let's talk outside of the house." I was glad I didn't have to explain.
"We can go now if you're in the mood and aren't doing anything. I need to stop a few other places, actually. You down for that?"
"Sounds great, Aunt Tamara. I just need to put some shoes on. Meet you back here in a few minutes." I hugged her, and I could tell she hadn't expected it. What had gotten into me lately, being all lovey-dovey with Tamara and Joey? Some people would call it personal growth. Whatever it was, it felt good. Joey met me in the hallway, and naturally he'd been eavesdropping. I reminded him that a dramatic entrance only worked if you left the scene. It was rude to listen in on private conversations. "I'm out for a while. Stay out of trouble and my makeup." To my surprise, he didn't beg me to stay. Instead, he presented me with a list of things he wanted me to pick up for him. I accepted the dirty piece of paper as I carefully avoided touching his cold hand. He had a towel wrapped around his head for some reason. Clearly, he was trying to do something with his eyebrows, because they looked all out of whack. He was still a bit lackluster in color, but if he felt good enough to pluck his eyebrows, I guessed he was doing okay. God knew what was going on in that room of his. He rarely let me in, which was highly suspicious. Before he had a room, he spent all his time in mine. Then I heard a man's voice. "Who's in there?" I blurted out. "Do you have company?" He never had visitors, unless you counted his ghost cat, which he sometimes called Mr. Ruffles or Pinkerton. I wondered if he actually remembered what he'd named the animal. That was definitely no cat I heard in there now. "Joey, does Tamara know you have guys over?"
"Can't a guy have any privacy in this place? If you see my cat, let me know. And for the record, his name is Mr. Pinkerton. You have my list. Later."
He vanished into his bedroom door, which simultaneously closed in my face. Instinctively, I knocked on it, which didn't do me a bit of good. Joey had his radio going, and the air had an electric vibe that unsettled me. Too much collected energy made me sick, and the place was throbbing with it. I gave his list a cautious glance. Hell no, I wasn't going to buy him razors. And what was that? So ridiculous. Was everyone in this house dating except me? This list had Tamara's name written all over it. Just wait until Tamara got a load of this. I shoved Joey's list in my pocket and went in search of my purse. I hurried into my room to grab it and my shoes. My purse wasn't where it had just been. As Tamara called me from downstairs, I began digging for it. 2. Chloe.
"Joey, you better not be pulling a prank on me."
"I'm busy, sunshine. What prank?"
I hadn't made my bed that morning, so there was a possibility my purse was hidden under the jumbled-up comforter. I snatched it off the bed, but my efforts yielded nothing. I got on my knees to search under the bed. "My purse is missing again. I'm pretty sure Tamara didn't take it. Joey?"
"No time for this chit-chat. Wasn't me. Later, tater."
My slouchy purse wasn't very large, and it could have fallen off while Lynn and I were chatting. Joey wasn't great at lying. If he'd been tinkering around with it, I was pretty sure I would have known. He had no qualms about invading my personal space. But he wasn't a liar. Evasive? Yes. A good liar? No. I moved a few things around beneath the bed to get a good look. I had some storage boxes under there stuffed with photos and postcards I'd found in Mom's trunks. After shifting the items around, I spotted the vintage denim pouch. How in the world did it get here stuffed behind the boxes? That was just weird. If Joey didn't do it, and Lynn didn't, someone else had. My room's energy barrier was down, and apparently anyone could walk in. As I reached for my purse, an odd sound caught my attention. Tick, tick, tick. The sound I heard was the steady ticking of a clock. My digital clock did not make those kinds of sounds. I had a watch, but it was also digital, and there were no other clockworks or any reason for there to be ticking. I slid under my bed and was moving boxes around when I caught an odd pattern in the wood. The flooring was off, slightly raised and uneven. I could feel it. The whole section of flooring appeared smooth, but the one patch appeared older and rougher. I rubbed my hand over it to confirm. It was different. I didn't normally get focused on things like this, but I had to take a closer look. "Joey, why is there a ticking sound coming from my floor?" No answer. Not a peep. Tamara called me downstairs, but I couldn't turn away from my current task. She would just have to wait a minute. My bed wasn't heavy, not a sleigh bed like Lynn's. Nothing fancy. It had a simple antique frame with a metal headboard with ceramic floral details. As I slid out from under the bed, I shoved the comforter out of the way and tossed the purse on the mattress as I nudged the furniture from the spot I wanted to investigate. Finally, I could see the floor good and proper. I squatted next to it
and rubbed my fingers over the obvious edges of a strange cutout. The bit of wood was definitely off and different. It was a hiding spot, I realized. I knelt and, with some hesitation, put my ear next to the floor. Tick, tick. I could hear it, the ticking. Tick, tick. It had to be a clock. What else made a ticking sound? A bomb? That was ridiculous. Who would put a bomb in the floor of my room? The only way to know what I was looking at would be to open this puppy up. I examined the wood and could find no visible screw marks or nails. No tools needed then. I used my fingernails on the edges of one board and, after a few painful attempts, successfully lifted it up. A few more tries and I got a good finger hold beneath it. The board came up. The second was even easier. It was a hiding spot. The hole was dark and shallow, but the ticking grew louder. There was nothing to do but investigate. I should probably have used my flashlight or the app on my phone, but I was transfixed by the hidden treasure that had been beneath my floor. I wondered how long it had been there. I'd been living in this house for almost 6 months, and I had never heard ticking before. Why was this clock ticking now? "Chloe, what are you doing?" I heard Tamara's worried voice behind me, but I couldn't answer her. My shaking hands reached into the darkness.
3. Annabelle.
"Do you hear the clock, Annabelle? Don't you lie to me. Don't you dare lie to me. You got to tell the truth. You're too old to be telling a bald-faced lie to old Anita. You be a grown girl, my Annabelle. You hear the clock, don't you?"
Anita's dark face hovered before me. Her chilly hands rubbed mine lovingly. I hated seeing the desperation in her old face. As always, I wanted to make things right, to please everyone, but I could not lie about this. I lied quite often, and the older I got, the easier I spun my tales. It was always easier to tell a lie. People liked to hear what they wanted to hear. Lying allayed spankings. Lies put smiles on faces. Lying would send me to hell. But life, at least my life, was made better by it. "No, Papa, I never touched your pipe. No, Miss Haynes, I don't know what happened to your matches. No, Anita, I didn't take the letter. I didn't see a letter at all." Lies associated with my love of fire were more difficult to offer successfully. I had to be very careful with those lies. I had to be extra careful when stealing things like matches or tobacco, and not to make my fires close to the house, too. Despite her piercing stare and gentle hands, I wasn't sure about making a confession.
"Tell me the truth, Annabelle. Don't you lie to me."
Anita continued to rub my hands lovingly. My heart beat fast in my chest. The wild, angry face of the clock was on the mantelpiece. Anita was hunkered down in her favorite chair. I never liked the clock, even though it was one of my mother's most treasured possessions. Up until recently, I'd never heard the clock make a sound. Now I heard it night and day. Once in a while, the ugly clock played awful music, but never when I expected it. Never on the hour or half hour, and one could never read time by it. The clock was always wrong, despite the carefully painted gold numerals that occasionally shimmered with an unearthly glow. I was not very old, and, according to my governess, not very smart, but even I comprehended this was not a normal device. The downstairs clock played lovely chimes twice an hour. It was always predictable and always soothing. This clock offered no such peaceful sounds.
"Yes, ma'am, I hear it."
Anita's deep brown eyes watered as she released my hands.
"I knew you would hear it. One day I knew you would hear it, just like she did. I hoped to God, I prayed you would never hear it, but I can see the curse is doing its work. I should never have agreed to contain it, but she would not be moved, Annabelle. I tried to capture it, but it was beyond my power. It's not my fault, dear child. Don't you hate old Anita?
My mouth suddenly felt dry and sour at the same time. I could never hate you. What curse, Anita? My voice dropped to a whisper. Am I cursed? Was Mama cursed? Anita patted her eyes with a gray handkerchief. After a minute, she covered her mouth with the damp fabric. She sobbed into it, but offered me neither a denial nor a confirmation. I put my arms around her neck and hugged her while I pondered whether or not I should have lied. Yes, I probably should have lied, but it was harder to lie to Anita than anyone else.
We are going to try something. We are going to try and break this curse, little Annabelle. We're going to try.
When? How, Anita? I don't understand. She hugged me tight and patted my back before releasing me.
We have to hide the clock. I need some time. That's what we'll do. We will hide it, Annie, and you will never hear it again, okay? I'll try again. Don't you look for it. Don't you talk to it. Don't do nothing about it. Promise me? No, you better swear to me.
She pointed her stubby finger at me, and I nodded obediently. I watched in silence as Anita took the clock and ordered me to sit in the chair and watch the fire. I did as she asked. I added wood when the fire got low. I poked it with the metal stick and squatted before it. I could see everything in the fire. I loved the flames and wished I could live in them. I would be at home in the warmth and the flickering colors. As I stared, I felt sleepy and trance-like. I could see Anita and the clock. I wasn't trying to see her. I wasn't trying to spy on her. But I knew exactly where she hid the clock. I knew one day I would have to go look for it. But for now, I stared into the flames and lost my way in the fire, as I always did. It was easy to do. Sometimes I could see Mama's face staring back at me, and sometimes I saw the other woman's face, the one who looked like Mama. There were others. My family, all women with eyes like mine, their eyes wide with fear, and their mouths opened in silent screams. Then I saw the girl.
4. Tamra. Chloe's room was never an orderly place, but she was sitting on the floor and staring into a hole. Her bed had been moved, and the teen wasn't moving. It was as if she were frozen in time, her pale hand above the space before her. Seeing Chloe's hand reaching into that hole filled me with dread. Wait, Chloe, wait! Naturally, as always with Chloe, she didn't pay attention to my warning. Her hands plunged through the spider webs and disappeared into the darkness. As she sat back, I hovered over her as she revealed a shiny black clock. It was an ugly item that didn't go with this house at all. The clock was old, very old, and it was like nothing I had ever seen with its black lacquer paint. It had a gold dial and numerals on the clock face, which was covered with dirty glass. Something about it was terrifying. Chloe held it up to me, but I didn't want to touch it. The round clock part was a screaming mouth, and over it was a slanted, flared nose. Above the screaming mouth and nose were two fierce eyes. They were precise and appeared more like fine wood carving than a lacquered object. Sheesh, Chloe. The clock was an actual face, and it wasn't pretty to look at. It was gross and interesting at the same time. What in God's name did you find? Chloe tried to hand it to me again, but I encouraged her to put it on the floor. I did not want to touch it, which seemed silly as I'd handled worse things in the past. The Elizabeth doll from the Clayton Hotel sprang to mind. I didn't have a good feeling about this clock. I dug my phone out of my purse and took a picture of it accidentally while trying.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?